Welcome to the September 29th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. Today, our service is led by our settled minister, Reverend Pam Phillips, and her sermon is titled Greater Expectations. The podcast begins with a reading read by Worship Associate Hayden Catlett.
Today's reading today is from Reverend James Jimka. I'm not just saying this because I'm your mother. Now listen, and believe me, you are the prettiest, nicest girl in the entire school, not to mention the brightest. And if you don't believe me, just go look in the mirror. I happen to know that there are dozens of young men who would give their eye teeth to go out with a wonderful girl like you. Boys are shy too, you know. Don't you worry. Someday your ship will come in. We could all use that kind of speech from somebody who grabs us by the lapels in the morning, looks us square in the eye, and says, "Listen, you are wonderful. You have what it takes. We all like what you are and who you are. You do a good job at life. We care about you. We love you. Count on that. Don't ever doubt that." And then you go off and begin your day. Healthy little kids know their hot stuff. Little kids strut. Little kids say what they think. When you tell Jose he looks terrific in his new shoes, he'll say, "I know." What happens to that? How do we lose that certainty that we look terrific in our new shoes? Well, we get battered about. Some big kid says that the new shoes are for babies. Grandma treats the shoes as just shoes. Jose loses sight of the bouncy, resilient child he is and becomes his shoes. That's the short answer. We lose sight of the good, solid citizen inside, the divinity within, and adopt what we think we heard from the outside world as a comment on our very core as a human being. It's self-esteem that can go to bat for us. Self-esteem is our reputation with ourselves, how we hold ourselves in our own estimation. It's a feeling, not a scorecard. It doesn't matter whether or not you are the best bowler on the team or the worst. The best salesperson in the company, or the worst, fat or thin, indebted or rolling in dough. It is psycho-epistemological at the very root of your being. What you think you're like, not what you do. Okay, healthy self-esteem is something we believe in, but believing in isn't enough. We have to figure out how to get it. And just when we're busy figuring out how to get it, we remember that Unitarian Universalism tells us we already have it. Our theological ancestors pointed out that actually there's nothing we have to do. We simply possess a small light that we need only uncover and let shine.
You look good in those shoes, Jose. I know. I love that image of a small child who takes a compliment the way we all should, with pride and delight. Why is it that we are taught at such a young age that it isn't okay to take pride and delight in ourselves and our accomplishments? Imagine what you would think if an adult were to respond in the same way. "Hey, Rev Pam, you look great in those glasses." "I know." Would you think I was a little arrogant? Maybe a lot arrogant? Do you know people who do that? You do? I have thought, who said yes? So what do you think of them when they do that? Do you go, "You go, girl"? They're fabulous. You know, I had a professor in graduate school who you'd say, "How are you?" And he goes, "I'm fabulous." And he meant it. Why is it that we get that knocked out of us? I also love the confidence children have in themselves and their futures. When you ask a little one what they want to be when they grow up, they seem so full of optimism and free of negative and limiting expectations. They know that they can be anything they want to be. A cowgirl or a construction worker, a dancer or a doctor, an astronaut or an actor, the president of the United States, or any combination thereof. Have you heard kids do that? I'm going to be a doctor and a waitress. I don't know why. Or a cashier. I knew a child that wanted to be a cashier. It just made their heart sing. Do you remember when you were that confident? That free of limiting expectations? Anyone? Do you remember when your children were that way? Are they still that way? Yeah. Wish I could bottle that childlike optimism. What would the world be like if we could maintain that? Now, as we prepared for today, Hayden and I shared stories about times we got battered down by people who loved us. I think I've told this story to a few people, but it bears repeating. When I told my family that I had been asked to be president of the congregation in Charlottesville, my father's response was, "Good for you. I know how much your church means to you." My Uncle Scott said, "Now they'll know what we know about you, how wonderful you are." But my mother's response, "Are you sure you can do it?" When Hayden got a note of congratulations for his high school graduation, a note that said, "Keep working hard. You can be whatever you want to be," his grandma said, "Well, that's not true. You can't be president." I'm betting that she's wrong. I wouldn't mind voting for you. Why do people who love us tamp down our expectations? I think it's because they are trying to protect us from failure. My mother knew I had a pretty demanding job already. I was a teacher. I did a lot of reading and preparing and grading papers at home after I got home from work. She didn't want me to overcommit myself, and I get that. But her attempt at protecting me from failure had the implicit message that she didn't believe that I could do it. And had I heeded her warning, it would have protected me from success. Now, as it was, I already had some doubts that I had the skills and the knowledge to be president of the Board of Trustees. The two presidents before me were older, retired men. I thought I was too young. But as I told people at the time, a senator named Barack Obama was at the time running for president of the U.S., and he's several months younger than I am. So if he could be the leader of the free world, I could be the leader of my congregation. And as it turned out, had I never served as the president of the UU congregation in Charlottesville, watching the example of two interim ministers, helping navigate tricky waters when one of our members was arrested and convicted of a serious crime, learning how to lead, had I not done that, had I not risked that, I almost certainly wouldn't have risked retiring from teaching and going to seminary. And I wouldn't be your minister today. Sometimes we have to get past those limiting expectations others have for us, that we aren't good enough, or smart enough, or whatever enough to live into our best selves. And when we do get past those limiting expectations, so much more than we can imagine might be possible. Such was the case with a man named Daniel Kish, who was featured on an episode of the radio program Invisibilia. Anybody hear about it? It's called How to Become Batman. Jamie said, oh, our minister in Charlottesville would love that. He had Batman figurines all over his office. Not that kind of Batman. Totally blind since he lost his eyes to cancer as a toddler, Kish is able to get around as well as a sighted person using echolocation. Those of you who went and saw Nobuntu clicking. He clicks with his tongue, and the way that those clicks bounce off the things in the environment, he gets a sort of sonic representation of what's around him. If you listen to the program, it's amazing. He goes, here's a bench, there's a garbage can. I mean, he can tell what the things are just by hearing the clicks bounce off. And they actually did functional MRIs, and the same parts of the brain that light up when we see with our eyes lit up in him when he was getting those images from echolocation. He credits his mother's willingness to let him risk failure for his success. She let him explore the world as if he weren't blind, letting him climb trees and ride a bike. And he learned how different his experience was from other children's from the book The Making of Blind Men by Robert Scott. Now, based on a multi-year long survey to see how effective blindness organizations were at helping the blind, Scott determined that the organization's low expectations for what blind people could do was in some way actually limiting the blind people that those organizations sought to help. So they would go pick them up. They would walk them into the building. They would do everything for them. He tells a story of talking to a man who was working in a paint factory, and there was an explosion, and he was blinded. And the people at the factory really liked him and wanted him to come back. They said, go get some training, and you can come back and work here. And the blindness organization said, oh, you can't do that. He heard that over and over again. So that instead of empowering the blind, these organizations were further disabling the visually impaired by helping them too much. And the same is true for students with visual disabilities when their teachers and paraprofessionals do too much for them or don't allow them to run and play. Apparently, a lot of it has to do with fears about insurance. So kids aren't allowed to play on the playground equipment. I remember a young man that I taught in sixth grade. He came to me. He couldn't do anything for himself. He couldn't put all of his materials back into his backpack at the end of the class. And I understand where that came from. It was so maddening to sit and watch him do it himself. It would have been so much faster if I'd done it for him. But in the end, it was worth that extra time to let him do things on his own. And now, as I'm thinking about all that I'm telling you, I remember him telling me what he wanted to be when he grew up. He wanted to be a truck driver. And I said, really? I bet he could do it now. I think I need to get in touch with him. Robert Scott goes so far as to say that blindness is really a social construct, that the physical limitations are outpaced by the limitations placed by cultural expectations, low expectations. So Daniel Kish decided to start a nonprofit so that he could unteach those low expectations and give blind people more mobility and independence by teaching them how to use echolocation. And he's had some success. Ironically, though, the greatest impediment Kish is up against in his quest to change expectations is love. There was a piece about taking a young boy out into the environment and helping him to become more independent, and he was walking towards a road, and Daniel Kish kept saying, what do you hear? What do you hear? Oh, I can hear cars. And just as he was getting fairly close, his godmother pulled him back because she was afraid he was going to get hit by a car. That second before he could learn himself what that limit was. Ironic that love is what keeps us from being able to let them learn. But I don't want to spend all our time this morning talking about how low expectations limit us. I'd rather focus on the amazing abilities of a blind man who didn't let the cultural expectations keep him from hiking and biking and living a full and independent life. Now, this service came out of a discussion in our worship team meeting about what it might mean to be a people of expectation, which is our theme this month. But much of the conversation was skewing negative. We talked about how our expectations determine what we think about ourselves and each other and the world. We talked about how expectations can lead to disappointment. But then David Lally turned us around. I see some smiles. You know how he can do that. As he shared his experiences with students he worked with at Virginia Tech as an academic advisor. He talked about how timid and lacking in self-confidence some of his students were, how self-limiting they were because they had such low expectations for themselves. But he also talked about how exciting it was when they began to recognize and acknowledge their strengths. Have you ever worked with someone and you saw that light bulb just kind of go on over their head? Yeah? When all of a sudden they go, I would love to have had David as my advisor. I can imagine what it must have felt like. I can imagine seeing new possibilities where I hadn't seen them before, recognizing strengths that I didn't know or maybe didn't want to admit that I had. He reminds me of the mother at the beginning of the reading that Hayden did, the one who was telling her daughter that she was the prettiest, the nicest girl at the school, but with one significant difference. Because I think David's encouragement was much more realistic. I'm guessing that the daughter probably wasn't the prettiest or the smartest. Maybe she was. Maybe in other people's eyes, not so much as her mother's. So while her pep talk was well-intentioned, it was probably not accurate or realistic. And that's important. When we aim high, expecting the best from ourselves, it's important to stay somewhat grounded and expect to work for what we achieve. A study published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology in 2002 highlighted the difference between having positive expectations and positive fantasies. Expectations are based on past experiences. You expect to do well on an exam because you did well on an exam before. Or you expect to meet another partner because you managed to meet your last partner, and so on. Fantasies, though, involve imagining something you hope will happen in the future, but experiencing it right now. That kind of fantasizing reminds me of athletes visualizing themselves winning a race. Have you heard of that? Just see yourself winning the race. The researchers examined how people thought about four challenges: getting a job, finding a partner, taking an exam, and recovering from a surgery. And they found that those who had positive fantasies did worse than those who had positive expectations. 2 years after leaving college, the fantasizers had applied for fewer jobs, had been offered fewer jobs, and if they were in work, had lower salaries. I think that's really interesting, that the fantasies didn't lead to success, but the expectations did. One explanation for the difference is that the problem with positive fantasies is that they allow us to anticipate success in the here and now. However, they don't alert us to the problems we are likely to face along the way and can leave us with less motivation. After all, it feels like we've already reached our goal. Kind of an interesting thought. It makes me think of Daniel Kish, who had positive expectations, not fantasies, for himself. As he taught himself how to venture out into the world, one of the things he taught himself how to do was ride a bike. And he quite literally ran into a few obstacles. He ran into a metal light pole, sounds like more than once, and a shed. He lost his front teeth. But he was able to solve the problems and learn from them. We can't wish our way into meeting greater expectations. So, we shouldn't be limited by our loved ones' expectations. We shouldn't be limited by cultural expectations. We shouldn't be limited by our own expectations. But we should have positive expectations, not positive fantasies. Oh, and it's helpful to have a cheerleader, a parent, an advisor, a friend who can help us realize our strengths, to acknowledge that we are worthy. In the piece that Jane, her name is spelled R-Z-E-P-K-A, Rzepka. I looked it up online. If you're from Poland, you say it differently than if you're from England or America. Anyway, Jane writes that Mr. Rogers is the pro on self-esteem. But acknowledging that we don't have Mr. Rogers telling us we're wonderful every day, she writes, but we do have each other. It doesn't take much. This is what we can do. We can accept and affirm one another. That's what our first principle is all about. We affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And yet, while we can affirm it in others, we have a hard time remembering that that principle applies to ourselves as well. When I found the prayer I shared earlier, it resonated with me. Sometimes I hear that critical voice in my head telling me that I don't measure up to other people. The voice that says we're a mess, a mistake, a fool, a fraud. Does that resonate with anyone else? You hear that voice? That says everyone else has it together. Look around the room. Do you see someone who you think has it together better than you do? Yes. Guess what? They're thinking the same thing about you. So we convince ourselves that it's better to keep our head down. Don't rock the boat. Try to shrink ourselves to fit expectations. Make ourselves small. When we shrink ourselves to fit expectations, those limiting expectations, we protect ourselves from failure. You can't fail if you don't try. But I like where Reverend Walk takes us in her prayer, turning to scripture, Psalm 139, and to a scientist. I think it was Carl Sagan who first said that we were made of stardust. The psalmist says that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Of stars and dust, our stories say, stars and dust. Help us remind each other of that every chance we get. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. We are made of star stuff. When we consider the intricacies of the human body and the brain, even when they don't work the way we may want them to, they're still pretty miraculous. Think of Daniel Kish clicking his way around the world and riding a bicycle. And apparently other blind children do that automatically. But cultural expectation says it's not proper. And if we all have a little light within us, a spark of the divine, who are we to hide that light? When we consider what it means to protect ourselves from failure, it's good to remember the words of Marianne Williamson. You've probably heard a little bit more about her. I know. So she's running for president. And I thought about not using this particular quotation. Do you know what I'm about to read? Okay. So just remember, sometimes wonderful words come from interesting sources. My husband wanted me to just paraphrase her words, but she says it better than I can. You've heard it before, I think. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Makes me think of Jose and his shoes. Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us. It's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Think about it. What if, like your friend who, when gets a compliment, says, "I know." What if we all could do that? What if we could all acknowledge that light that is within us? We see it in each other all the time. So in the week ahead, consider, what is your light? How can you make it shine more brightly? It's there. Amen, and blessed be.